Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. We've all seen or been a part of scenes like this. A group of friends sitting together quietly, each in their own world, looking at their telephones, obsessively checking our email or Facebook statuses, taking any spare moment to flip through Pinterest or Flipboard or 100 other apps. Smartphones, tablets, screens dominate an increasing proportion of our lives. For some, it's the fear of missing out or FOMO. For others, it's bringing your job and career into your home and into your personal life. Today, we meet a writer who went on a 31-day internet fast and lived to tell about it. Her Letters from a Luddite project gained international attention. In fact, she found that instead of saving times, screens increasingly seemed to cause her to waste it. Christina Cook is a journalist and writer who's worked for the CBC and other digital media organizations. Her TED Talk on letting go of technology was a part of the 2013 Global TED Women Conference. Her new book is titled The Joy of Missing Out, Finding Balance in a Wired World. It's published by New Society Publishers. She joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Christina Cook, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
There was a New York Times article Sunday on what's called FOMO, the fear of missing out. How much do you think does that drive our obsession with checking our digital devices? That seems to be, you can go anywhere in any place and see people. If you're in a park, instead of looking out at the park or looking at kids playing, they're looking at a digital device. Just about anywhere you go, you see this use of digital device. Do you think that FOMO, fear of missing out, is what's driving that?
I think it's part of it for sure, you know, the sense of, like, if I don't check in, I might miss out on something. But I think, though it may have started with that reason, I think that something has developed in us where it is just a compulsive thing that we do, you know, in between dropping my kids off or waiting for in a line for something, you know, we just pull out our phones to fill the time because it's a compulsion. It's something that we do. The fear of missing out piece, I think, is a big one, particularly for social media. If you're keeping up on particular trends or things that you are interested in or you need to keep up with for work. But we have developed this desire to be in two places at once. And it's very difficult for people now to sort of be focused in the present moment and what they're doing and sort of just not pick up the phone in those little two-minute, you know, lulls in the day. So I think fear of missing out is part of it, but I think it's also just become an addiction for most of us to just sort of check in online.
And we have to sort of take ourselves out of the digital revolution to see how silly this is. Think of somebody who would check their answering machine every 5 minutes to see if somebody had called and left a message. Think of somebody who would go to the mailbox 25 times a day before the mail came to see if the mail had come. And yet we do this with our digital devices all day long.
That is such a great way of putting it. I haven't actually heard someone put it that way before, but that's exactly what we're doing. And I think we probably would say that person was OCD, right? Like going back and forth to their mailbox. But it's true, we do that, you know, rather than setting one or two times a day to check our email, we check it 18 times on our phone. And we might think that those check-ins are saving us time, but I actually, when I stepped away from the internet for 31 days, I discovered that actually it wasn't a time saver, it was actually a time sucker. So it's, some major shifts have been happening, and it's all very interesting. We're all figuring this out at the same time.
And of course, this comes on the heels of a technological revolution, which really has been almost, you have to go back about 100 years or so, where we've just introduced new technological devices, communication devices that have changed our lives. Phones first, telegraph, if you even go back further, but radio, television, computers, just the whole line of things. And what's happened is over the last probably 30 years, these technologies just enter into our orbit quicker and quicker and quicker. So disruption becomes sort of a more constant part of our life.
Yeah, constant disruption at, you know, warp speed is what we're living with right now. And, you know, those disruptions really impact the way that we think, the way that we emotionally regulate, the way that we interact with other people. When we're constantly switching on and off, you know, trying to multitask between many things all of the time, it really does impact our way of relating to people and our way of relating to information. And so in my book, The Joy of Missing Out, which we're going to talk about, you know, I'm mostly posing questions for people to be asking themselves before they adopt a new app or a new technology. You know, why do I need this? Where is this energy going to come from? Will it be life-giving? Is it going to be making me more of the person that I want to be? Yeah, and I think that by asking ourselves some of these questions, we can more mindfully navigate our digital interactions.
Now, in it, you sort of begin with the internet, because the internet is sort of the basis for a lot of these technologies today. And you go through the good and the bad. What are the good parts about the internet as far as how you use the internet today?
Mm-hmm. Google mapping is the most marvelous thing ever. It's also extremely safe. You know, I've got three small kids. And when I went offline for 31 days, I had to go and buy a map book, like an old paper map book. And that thing was very difficult to read, very challenging. So when I came back, I embraced Google mapping with arms wide open.
That's right. It doesn't have a dot on the map to show you where you are.
Where am I? Exactly. And also just really safe. You know, I don't have to stop and look down or be distracted. You know, it talks to me. So I think that's fabulous. I'm one of eight kids that are now scattered all over the globe. I've got a sister in Australia, a sister in Las Vegas, brothers in Vancouver. I'm in Toronto. So, you know, one email can connect us all to the same information. You know, we're about to go on a big trip all together. So that sharing stories, sharing pictures with one another, that's an unbelievable tool. It connects us in a beautiful way. Of course, when we get together in person, it will be all the more richer. But the email, you know, and the different ways we connect online are helpful. Also, when I was offline for 31 days, I'm a writer, and I had to file two stories by USB stick in an envelope by mail. And let me tell you, that filing stories by email is way better. One of them got lost. It cost me a bunch of money. You know, being able to exchange information for free in milliseconds is an amazing gift, you know, when used wisely. So I think the internet's amazing for a myriad of reasons.
Beyond the normal bad side of the internet, which we think of, you know, as the dark internet, where, you know, just about anything goes, and there's really, the internet can be as dark as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. But what about the bad side of the internet? What did it take away from your life?
You know, it is really the capacity for being in the present moment, being physically with my children, present to them, to my partner, my husband, to my friends and family. You know, when I'm actually with a person, you know, the phone in particular can draw my attention away from being really present to them and giving them my full attention. There's a great quote, which I love, from Thomas Joy Paine that says, you know, with our time and our presence, we give love. Simple. You know, it's simply that when we actually fully engage with people, that we are communicating love to them. And I found that the internet was allowing me to emotionally disengage. You know, I found myself saying no to going out to social events to check out and watch another show on Netflix for the third night in a row. You know, why was I doing that? Why was I not getting off the couch to go to a show in person, you know, to connect more with friends? So those are some of the things that I wanted to take a look at in my own life. And also, I just wasn't finding time for even writing every day. I had gotten out of the practice of doing that. I am a writer, but I have young children. And I found, as I was using the internet more, that I just wasn't getting time to do a lot of things that I really wanted to do. And when I actually stepped away from that, I found that I actually had huge windows of time in the day, or even small windows that added up to a lot of time, where I could do things that I wanted to do, like read or write or call particular people. And I was wasting a lot of that time just sort of checking in on Facebook or whatever. So
I'm struck by something you wrote in the book. It says, you know, you're talking about one of the good aspects of the internet, you know, being able to catch up with a far-flung family. It says, you know, seeing pictures of your dad's fishing trip, it's not the same thing as him telling you the story of him holding up his arms and say, the fish was this big. You know, these sorts of things that really add a much more layered nuance to our lives than what we get on over a screen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That was actually one of the main relationships that I was really struggling with, was my relationship with my father. My dad remained one of two people in my life that I only ever communicated with in person or over the phone, because we don't live in the same city anymore. So all of a sudden, my dad got an iPhone and he was texting me, and then he was on Facebook, and then we weren't talking to each other on the phone anymore. And I was seeing pictures of things he was doing, but I missed the sound of his voice actually recounting the story. This is what you're describing that I wrote about in the book. And, you know, I really miss that. And I realized that when we actually did talk on the phone, we were just sort of filling in the gaps of what we had seen each other post online rather than like, this great thing happened and let me tell you about it. We weren't really telling the stories anymore. And that was something I was really missing out on.
As you embarked on this 31-day internet fast, you obviously had to figure out a way to communicate with other people, and you chose a manual typewriter, an old old typewriter. And as you began investigating this, you found that there's a whole sort of subculture of people who are going back to things like this, real typewriters. And I think one of your sources said, you know, it's like when you get a typed letter, it's like the mistakes are there. You get a sense of really who the person is as opposed to some sort of glossy edited email. Mm-hmm. It's more of the real person, which sort of gets at the heart of what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, and even more so, I would argue, with the handwritten letter, right? With you actually
right.
see their actual way that they write. And, you know, for me, of course, the typewriter is also a technology, right? The internet, the computer, they're all technologies. It's an older technology, but I found it demanded more of me. It required me to not edit, because once it was there on the paper, it was there. I couldn't, you know, erase it, which was important for me because I, especially online, and I do talk about this a fair amount in the book, about how we can edit and present sort of this perfect, or not even perfect, but just the particular part of us that we want to share with the world rather than all of us. And that's why I really argue that the majority of our time should be spent in person with people as much as we can, because that paints the real picture of our lives. You know, we can always choose what to share and what not to share online. But when we're really with people, you know, we can't really hide. And that's really important as humans and as people, to just be connecting with people in a real way.
You know, in the early part of the book, you have a very journalistic portion of the book where you're really interviewing a lot of people and taking stories from other people. And, you know, everything from Louis C.K., who says, you know, he didn't want to give his kids a smartphone because he says, you know, kids will be mean. And says, you know, if you're mean to somebody in person, you can see the hurtful effect of your words. If you put it on a screen and send it out anonymously, you don't ever see that impact. You also write about the ability to interpret nonverbal communications. When you're looking at a screen, you don't get the whole communication because you're not seeing how the people are reacting to what you say, the face, the body language, and that's all important in communicating.
Absolutely. You know, it's like in a span of very few years, we've decided as a culture that nonverbal communication isn't important, but we all learned in high school biology that nonverbal communication is our primary way of communicating. Like right now, I am making facial expressions. I'm gesturing with my hand. You know, you can hear my vocal cues, but you can't see so much of what I'm communicating, and I can't see yours. You know, the majority of our communication, especially when it's by text, particularly with teens or the rest of us with email and social media, you know, we're missing out on 90% of what people are saying, and that's absolutely crucial. Yeah, so that's, you know, I kind of joke at the beginning, it dawned on me one day, you know, the human is the original communications device, right? We're the ultimate communications device. We can communicate so much more than our computers allow.
My guest today is Christina Cook, a journalist and writer. She's the author of The Joy of Missing Out, Finding Balance in a Wired World. It's published by New Society. And instead of the fear of missing out, it's the joy of missing out. She went on a 31-day internet fast. Now, this was a couple of years ago, if I remember right. So how did you prepare for it? What did you learn during the course of the month?
It definitely took some preparation. You know, I had to warn the people in my life that I wasn't going to be engaging with them, you know, on email, et cetera. I did still have my phone for safety because I've got young kids, and also for sanity purposes. But everything else was turned off. So like I mentioned before, I had to go out and buy a map book if I wanted to find my way to certain places. I had to look up particular phone numbers I wouldn't be able just to Google for. Yeah, it actually took quite a bit of preparation, a couple of months, or maybe actually... Go ahead.
What was your friends' reactions to this?
Most people were intrigued, to be honest. No one thought, you know, you're absolutely nuts. So probably because I've been talking and thinking about this stuff for quite a long time. I studied communication in university, so this has all kind of been mulling around in my head for a while. But It definitely impacted my relationships with my friends. You know, I did miss out on social events that were planned only on Facebook, even though they knew I wasn't online, which was definitely a bummer. You know, I did miss out on things, but I would say that, you know, what I gained far outweighed what I missed out on. I found such a clearness in my head. You know, I'm starting to hear more and more about kind of people talking about feeling cluttered or the clutter online. I just, that completely cleared away. I just, like I could see clearly that I, yeah, just didn't, I had a quietness of mind. And the other thing was just time. I discovered that all of those little smartphone check-ins I made on my phone multiple times a day were actually time wasters, and that if I saved up all those little check-ins, it added up to more than an hour a day. And I mean, all of us lament, you know, I have no time, I'm so busy. If you could reclaim an hour a day to do stuff, that would be pretty life-changing. And that's what I discovered when I stepped away.
So as you discovered this, how did you fill that hour? Was there a sort of withdrawal period as you began this fast?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I had set up a blog about the experience. It was called Letters from a Luddite, and it was kind of play on me typing these letters each day. For 31 days, I wrote a letter to the same friend and mailed them across the country. And I'd set up a blog that she was going to be updating, and I wanted to make a tweak to it. And of course I couldn't. And the editor in me was just like stressing, right? I need to get on there. I need to change it. But a couple of hours later, I just decided, you know, I have to let this go. And that's really what it was. And ultimately that's what the experience was I was continuously having to let go of being on top of, you know, the up to the minute news, doing my regular check-ins on social media to see how people were doing or how they were depicting themselves doing. So there was, yeah, a couple of days where I was going through a regular detox where I did want to check in online. But, you know, by the second or third day, it's much easier to be 100% offline than to navigate your discipline afterwards. That was my experience.
Well, after a couple of days, you find out you have this extra time. How did you use it?
You know the stack of books that lots of us have on our bedside table, you know, the half-read books?
Yes.
I read them all, you know?
Wow.
I just chipped away. Because at night, I couldn't turn on Netflix, which is definitely my go-to evening thing. So I just kept pulling books off the shelves. You know, I'd even bring them with me to the park with my kids, you know? Like, I'm not one of those, like, hover parents. Like, I like to relax a bit. So I would read while my kids played at the playground. I made phone calls to people that I was really had not been intentional as much as I would have liked keeping up with. I have a few friends and some family members that aren't really online very much, and I was reaching out to them. And I was getting to writing. I got out of the practice of daily writing, and the letters that I was writing every day, I was filling my time with writing those and getting those in the mail and just being with my family and my neighbors.
Now, did you run into this at all? There's a lot of people now who would rather have a text or an email or some sort of written communication than actually spending time on the phone. Did you ever run into that with some of your more digital-oriented friends?
I did. Not with friends, but I actually had to submit 2 articles while I was offline, which was extremely complicated, but I had phone numbers for people and I was doing interviews over the phone or in person. And in one instance, someone wanted to send me a bunch of information online, which is completely valid, right? If it's a bunch of information, you know, communicating it all over the phone is quite tedious. And I could misquote them potentially. So that was definitely a challenge. That was one thing that I ran into.
Well, what did you find after the 31 days? It sounds like from what you said that once you began using technology again, setting limits was difficult.
Mm-hmm. The first thing I did right off the bat was the first thing I went back to was to email, because I knew there would be messages there that I did need to deal with. So what I did was I actually spent 3 or 4 hours unsubscribing from all unnecessary email clutter. You know, those emails that come in multiple times a day that you don't look at or you just quickly delete your archive.
Yeah, delete immediately.
Yeah. I just didn't want them even like blipping onto my radar. So I took the time to unsubscribe from them. So that was a really big help right off the bat. I also did not put social media apps back on my phone. And that has been a huge change for me. I think that people that are struggling with being on social media all the time, it just being very compulsive and addictive for them, you know, getting it off your phone, having to actually go to your laptop, your computer to check in on those things, you know, really gives a bit more of a buffer in terms of your usage. That was a big thing for me. And just the mind shift of viewing the internet as a tool. You know, it is a tool that's there to connect us to other people, to information, and it's meant to help us. So I actually view it as a tool, and I sit down before I go online and write a list of the things I want to do online before I go on. So I actually write it on a piece of paper, and I try and check off that list as quickly as possible and then move on to other things. So those are some of the shifts that happened for me when I came back online.
My guest today is Christina Cook. She's the author of The Joy of Missing Out, Finding Balance in a Wired World, which she advocates putting strict limits on our screen time, if you will. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. One of the things I was struck by, one of your comments was, you know, in how you dealt with people in a medium that we think brings us closer together. You said, I was making arm's length personal. And that was really striking, because there is something about that. I think you alluded to it earlier that, you know, we edit our lives. So, you know, making arm's length personal just really resonated with me. Can you talk a little about that?
Mm-hmm. All of our different online technologies are mediating us. You know, they are an in-between. And I shared this one particular story in the book about a group of us that came together for a trip, and it was with a creative hero of mine, a writer and an artist who I had known from afar, and all of a sudden I was going to be meeting her in person, and I had all kinds of complicated emotions about that experience. I wanted it to be awesome. I was nervous about how it was going to go. Maybe it wouldn't go so well, and I realized, you know, I'm feeling so nervous because I'm making the arm's length personal. I'm bringing it close to me, and when so many of our relationships are, there's a distance, we can manage it. We actually control that relationship because we can choose if we're going to respond. We can choose if we're going to share or like that information. When most of our interactions are like that, it actually is not very intimate. And that intimacy is something that we need to develop and nurture in our lives, I believe. And so, in my book, I'm really advocating for being more engaged close to home, you know, with our families, with our neighbors, making those, most of our arms like engagements, more personal. So that might mean, if you usually text your best friend, that might mean picking up the phone and calling them, which for some people is incredibly difficult. And I think that's something that we need to then pay attention to.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned your small children several times, and one part of the book looks at the screen's effects on children. And I think this is something that's hopefully being researched in depth, to see what this effect of a whole generation starting from birth being digital native, and with especially the amount of technology we have today as opposed to even 10 years ago. And we talked earlier about, you know, the ability to interpret nonverbal communication. Old people can do that much better than young people. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's experience, but it's also, I think, the effect of seeing things written down as opposed to communicating face-to-face.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely true. There are some studies, and I do write about one in the book, where they actually show that people that have interacted for, you know, that are older, that have had, you know, decades of personal interaction with people, can read other people's emotions better. And I think it's for the reasons that you're describing. But I think that is timely, you know, to understand, you know, we can learn over time how to understand people better. But when we're keeping those relationships at arm's length, or our culture is, you know, even encouraging us to keep them at arm's length, then we are not going to be able to read people properly. And I do think that is happening with teens. I know it's happening with teens and kids. And it comes down to educators, to parents, to adults setting the example. You know, we're their technology teachers. We can't place the blame on kids and teens, and we enable, right? We buy them the gadgets, we enable them to use them, and even in schools, this is maybe a whole other conversation, but I have no understanding about why cell phones are allowed in classrooms anywhere. I just don't understand why that's even true.
Yeah.
Because how can anyone focus? An adult can't focus in a boardroom with a smartphone in their hand. Right? Nobody can. So why would we be allowing kids having them? It's just not helping them. So I think we really need to be asking these questions as individuals and as a culture for what's gonna benefit and bless us as a culture and as individuals as we move forward.
I was struck by your comment on modeling. You recount a story of a family at the beach, and the kids are out playing in the surf. You know, they're building sandcastles. The parents are basically sitting under the cabana or the tent or the umbrella, and they're checking their phones and they're looking at screens or watching movies on Netflix while the kids are out having a good time at the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this particular family, they're neighbors of mine, and they, the adults, were playing with their kids, and other kids would come and play with them, the adults, because they were hungry for that connection.
Well, your recommendations, you've given a couple, but one was checking email every other day. And I'm just thinking, I'm not sure I could even do that. I don't think I could do that. But you suggest checking email every other day. How does that work?
You know,
do you keep up?
You know, I right now, because I'm promoting the book, the great irony is that I'm way more online right now than I like to be, just as just for a season of time. So I'm not actually living that out right now, but I am going to be going back to Monday, Tuesday, Fridays, and I'm going to put because those are the days I actually can, because I've got childcare. And I'm actually going to put that as an autoresponder on my email, because it's crept in again for me. And I just want to be clear, you know, all of us are learning along the way. I make recommendations, but ultimately it's about trial and error and figuring out what works best for you. So, you know, if checking twice a day is going to be a really good step for you, then start with that. You know, don't try go for some arbitrary, I suggest every second day, you know, check it in the morning, mid-morning, check it at 4 again, you know, and get through it and move on. We all just need to figure out what works best for us. But for me, it's all about focusing on what it means to be human, what is truly life-giving for us, and focusing our attentions on those things, and those things tend to be offline.
And that's really the point. And the other recommendation I'm taking away is checking in with a friend in person rather than through technology, or sharing a story over the phone rather than sending an email or a text.
Those are good ones.
Yeah. Well, the name of the book is The Joy of Missing Out. And it sounds like there is some joy in missing out and not fear of missing out.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Christina Cook, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Christina Cook is a journalist and writer who went on a 31-day internet fast. Her letters from a Luddite project eventually resulted in the book, The Joy of Missing Out, Finding Balance in a Wired World. It's published by New Society Publishers. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.